We welcome you in to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. 10 out of 10 Taylor Swift fans recommend and listen to this very podcast. That's because I'm joined every single week by former 140-pound champion Chris Algieri. I, of course, am Dan Canobio. Chris, it's Super Bowl week. It's always Super Bowl week in the boxing world, but it's Super Bowl week in the sports world. How are you?
I'm good. Like most years, I forget when Super Bowl is because I don't really care. And this year, more than ever, I don't care. So
it's the Chiefs it's the Chiefs versus the 49ers. It's this Sunday. This is a boxing podcast, but this episode is brought to you by DraftKings. And if you're looking for a super offer for Super Bowl 58, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. New customers can bet the big game and turn $5 into $200 instantly with bonus bets. That's DraftKings Sportsbook app. And go ahead and download it right now. Use code IBL. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only at the DraftKings Sportsbook. That's the official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 58 with code IBL. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. If you're in New York, you can call 877-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in Connecticut. Help is available for gambling problem, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. You can go ahead and avoid that in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility, deposits, restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, Dan, you're getting better at that, bud.
Yeah, I'm so good at reading. I thought you were just drinking red sauce right there.
No. I got a little liquid IV action going on here.
Okay. All right. Algieri had himself a weekend.
Yeah. Yes, I did. And I worked out this morning, so I'm just trying to catch up.
Okay. All right. You know who had themselves a weekend? Where do we want to start? There's a lot going on in the boxing world. There's a lot going on in this sport that we love. We can talk about Conor Benn, who stepped into the ring. We can talk about Bawazi and Dan Azeez. We can talk about Better Biv and Bivol fighting on June 1st. But the biggest story, in my opinion, Chris, Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk. On Friday, it was off because of the cut suffered over the eye of Tyson Fury in sparring from what looked like is an elbow. So on Friday into Saturday morning, it is chaos on the timeline. Boxing fans are saying, see, I told you so. See, this fight's never going to happen. Are they ever going to step in the ring? June, July, August? Is Hrgović going to step in and fight Usyk? Is Fury going to retire? Until Saturday afternoon when our boy Ariel Helwani, of all people, on the MMA Hour, got all the parties in there. Got Usyk in there and his manager. Got our guy Turkey, His Excellency, in there with Tyson Fury. And His Excellency was spitting. He was on a roll. He goes, May 18th, fight's happening. Fury Usyk. I'm going to add an even bigger fight to the undercard, which already has Maris Bredis trying to get his title back from Jai Opatai. He says on June 1st, Better Biv's fighting Bivol. And then he says, on top of it, Fury and Usyk. If one guy pulls out, he has to pay the other $10 million. It was quite the interview. So he went from this fight being off, this fight maybe not happening, to now May 18th, Fury and Usyk. That's the timeline. Chris, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that we start with the bad news first because it is the biggest news around. It hit us with a flurry the other day, and we were both like, Friday was a sad day. Not only did that fight get announced off, Carl Weathers passed away, the great Apollo Creed. Yep.
R.I.P.
So, yeah, that Friday was bad news on top of bad news, insult to injury. But there's a little bit of shining light because of His Excellency really putting these guys to brass tacks, man. I like it. I like that he's pushing back. Like, listen, man, he's like, I'm going to put on these shows. I'm going to pay you a ton of money. You can't be doing this shit. Like, you can't just pull out of fights, which Tyson Fury has done before. Listen, cuts are cuts. Cuts happen. It's not crazy that it's happened. It just sucks because it was so close and it's such a big fight. So, you know, you can't really knock that if it is a real cut.
Chris.
There are some speculations.
Don't be that guy.
I'm going to do it.
You're going to put the tinfoil hat on?
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
It's a cut. I saw it.
But did you? Have we seen it?
He was on camera in that interview, and it was all cut. It was stitched up. I mean, they saw the cut that he posted on social media. That was nasty.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nasty.
Let's just assume it was a cut.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tinfoil hatting, but
whatever. Yeah. I mean, you're not the only person. I mean,
that's why I mentioned it, because I was reading quite a bit of people that were like, "No, this fight was never going to happen anyway. Right. This is happening for a reason." But listen, I always lean towards the fighters themselves. And listen, you get cut. It happens. Paulie Malignaggi, our buddy, he had something similar happen to him. He was actually going to fight on the undercard when I fought Amir Khan in Brooklyn. It would have been the only fight card that we had fought on the same card together. And he got cut badly from a southpaw elbow.
So, and when did that come? At what point of the training camp?
Oh, it was within a couple. It was just a couple weeks. Similar time frame. It happens. Yeah. So that's when the most intense sparring is. So does this happen? Yes. Is it also a sparring partner where you got a righty and an orthodox? I'm sorry, a southpaw and an orthodox competing? Yeah, and elbows, headbutts, those things happen. Headbutts aren't as common because you've got headgear on, and most headgear have a pretty protruding padding here. But elbows, man, those are not covered. And when you have a southpaw orthodox position, a lot of times guys are there. You're coming in, throwing that jab, and that those long bones of the forearm can be sharp. And when you got a tough sparring session, and I'm sure what Tyson Fury's game plan is to be rough and be on the inside and moving his guys around, it's very, very tricky that there could essentially be, you know, cut, and it's he got cut.
So. Yeah, good point. Good points there. Just to go back 1 second for the conspiracy theories out there, like those exist. Like, this is boxing. Oh, yeah. We've been disappointed so many times. We've heard of events being canceled because of bad ticket sales, or events being canceled because a fighter is just not ready for it, or mentally, physically. We've seen that with Fury. So I understand some of the Fury criticism that I've seen on the timeline and seen thrown my way when the cut was announced and the fight was off. I understand that. I understand, like, this is a guy that, you know, has lied in the past, who has left the sport, who has been accused of everything. I understand that. But for once, I feel like, yeah, this dude legitimately got cut in the eye. But that's the case when you had so many past transgressions that these fans are just not going to give you the benefit of the doubt anymore. They're pretty tired with his whole act. But we're getting it May 18th. And I want to talk about sparring and what goes on with sparring close to a fight. You know, when I got this news, I was in Orlando for a DAZN card, and I was calling it with Nonito Donaire. And I was like, hey, Nonito, like, how close to the fight did you spar? And he said, close, you know, 2 weeks. You know, you want to peak. You want to peak at the right time. You want to peak 2 weeks. And you could attest to this way better than I could. You want to peak 2 weeks. Some guys want to peak a week before. So how common is it for a fighter? In Fury's case, this was 13 days or 15 days before the fight. Maybe he would have stopped. That would have been his last training session, because you do want to peak heading in to the fight.
Yeah, and aside from peaking, it's about timing, right? So, and you don't want to get stale when you're not sparring. You don't have punches coming at you. You don't have to be competitive. And that's what sparring is. Sparring is competitive. I would usually stop sparring earlier in my career, 1 week. So I would spar pretty close. And then later on for my bigger fights, 10 days. So, I didn't like going 2 weeks without sparring leading into a big fight, regardless of who the fight was. But yeah, 10 days was usually where I was cutting it toward the end of my career, just because of these reasons. You know, you're also banged up during camp anyway. As you get to those last few weeks, you know, I always looked at sparring is everything. So I'm building up conditioning to get to the point where we start our sparring. The bulk of camp is going to be surrounded around that sparring. And then once that's over, camp is pretty much closed. Then it's just making weight and just getting to the fight and make sure you can recover. But listen, some guys are all different. And the way they go about their sparring partners, in terms of having really hard sparring or just working through certain things and more like touch sparring, there's a lot of different ways to do it. I came up from New York and we spar hard. And you want to be able to deal with your reflexes. I was also a reflex fighter. So Paulie Malignaggi, I bring him up again. He was a guy. He's like, I need hard sparring. I need hard sparring. And you know, the guy I trained in California as well with Robert Garcia in Oxnard. Same thing. Guys, we spar hard. And yeah, some guys become a little more fragile as they get older. Or guys who have cuts, you got to be careful. But there's a lot of padding. There's extra different headgear you can wear. The bar headgear, which is a
steel bar. Should he have been the one? What was the one he was wearing?
I don't know. I didn't see.
It looked like the traditional one where it just was a circle.
Open face. Yeah. Yeah. Open, probably an open face, because it's really difficult to get up in there.
And then also,
I saw a video. That's not the video from this, right? The guy lands a left hook on the inside. And then
it's the video.
That's the one?
Yeah.
All right, well, that didn't look like an elbow. That looked like a left hook.
I don't know what it was. Elbow, left hook, whatever. Yeah. I mean, it happened. Now we can get to the part where people can be even more skeptical. We get to how this fight now, Fury Usyk, is now May 18th. And we're about 90 days. Is that enough time for this cut to heal?
No. The traditional doctor's orders is you heal 1% per day for facial cuts. So you're looking at 100 days. So just over 3 months of no contact. You need to, you know, first couple of days, I mean, the stitches don't stay in for very long. And you keep them in, you get it closed up, depending on how bad the cut is. And you do stitches on the inside and the outside, depending. That one looked meaty. It looked like it was into the meat of the eye. So there most likely was going to be stitches on the inside and the outside, which is going to close it and help the healing process. It's only a couple of days that those stitches are in. They take those out, and then it just comes to just being careful, using salves, making sure that that cut doesn't get infected. Because bacterial infections is really what hinders the healing process. Mm-hmm. But, dude, you don't want to get cut. You don't want to get hit for a while.
So he's not going to do anything for 2 weeks, right? 3 weeks?
You're going to be – no, I mean, first week. First
I'm talking
week,
about, like, in terms of sparring. Like, he can stay
He's not going to spar for months.
He's not going to spar for, let's just say, a month or two?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that skin is not going to be as tough or as durable, and the risk of re-injuring and reopening that cut, very high. That's why
Fury was saying, I can, you know, I'm in great shape, so I'm going to continue to stay in really good shape by exercising this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. I take a month or two, like 45 days off from any contact in terms of sparring, mm-hmm. Maybe even 2 months, and then that final, I pick it right back up. Say, you know, mid-April, and I'm fine. I mean, that's what Fury said. I also saw Eddie Hearn say that. I was expecting Eddie to shit all over this, and Hearn was like, May 18th doesn't, you know, I think they can give it a go on May 18th. Like, I don't think that the Saudi officials would just throw out May 18th if they didn't feel like it could happen. Like, what's the point of saying it? Why not just say June freaking 8th or something? Like, why May 18th? Like, that if they don't believe that they think that he can get in there and give it a go.
Dan, listen, he can fight next month, realistically. That cut will be closed. It won't be healed, obviously, but it'll look okay, and he can step in the ring and fight. Like, that's just the nature of this game. And fights of this magnitude, yeah, I mean, get this fight in as early as you can, especially if he's in shape. I get it. I mean, he's been cutting fights before, right over that eye as well. The autobalene was that same one. It was just much bigger.
Yep.
But that is a deep cut. It looks like it went into the meat of that of that muscle above the eye. So yeah, it's going to take some healing, but listen, we're warriors, dude. And this is a lot of money. If I'm going in there and I'm getting paid the kind of money these guys, it's a cut's not really going to stop me. I'm going to get that thing stitched up. I'm going to do my best to get fight night, as healthy as I can. But if I'm not 100% healed, oh, well,
that's what I mean. Like, how many fights did you go into? Not 100%, but you know, you guys only have a certain amount of years athletes to make that money, make that top dollar. So I'm sure for you, like, you had to find something else in there until
I went into fights with broken hands, like literally broken bones in my hands or my wrist, just because I couldn't not fight, and also I didn't have insurance, so I needed the fight insurance.
Fighting, right? This is not what you're gonna hear. Not gonna hear this from Tyson Fury, who's got millions millions of dollars. But you know, he has a lot of money, Fury, and he's made a fortune. We get that. But you know, he was saying, like, how can you pretend that I'm faking this? Like, this is the biggest fight of me career, and it's the biggest fight. Biggest money fight for me. So I do believe him there. I understand.
I do too. People
don't believe him. Usyk's train manager, Ilgis, what is it?
Klimas.
Yeah.
Klimas, yeah.
He had one of the most insane lines, most insane quotes that I've ever seen in boxing. And this is a sport that's produced some of the most insane quotes. He said he had his bitch hit him over the face with a frying pan.
Wait, that was real? I thought that was a meme.
That was a real quote.
Wow. Wow.
So Fury brings it up in the interview. He says, first of all, don't call me a coward, Igus, ever again. I'm a blank, blank, blank. I've gotten up off canvas 10 times. I'm a this, that, and the other, three-time world champion and all that. And he goes, if you ever say another thing, call my wife a bitch again, I'm going to take you out. And Igus is like, I never said any. I wasn't talking about your bitch. I wasn't talking. It was amazing. And he's like, well, who did you mean then? And he didn't say. He's like, you said my bitch. So keep her out. Keep Paris Fury out of this. I've watched At Home with the Fury. She's a great mother to about 35 different Furies. But yeah, I don't understand the Usyk side of this.
Boxing's wild, man.
Right?
Ooh, I literally thought that was a comedy meme. I didn't think that was.
That's what I know. I put it out on our Instagram. I was like, you know, just put out these quote cards are crazy. And you know, he didn't apologize either. I guess he said, no, I stand by it. You know, he's a coward. I was like, oh, jeez. Crazy, wow. Man. So some of the other big news from this interview was His Excellency's Turkey. We're going to call him Turkey from here on out. I'm sure people are tired of hearing His Excellency. Turkey, in a attempt to make good on all this and assure us that Riyadh season is alive, tells us June 1st, Beterbiev versus Bivol, finally
Hell
getting
yes.
into the ring.
Hell
we have
yes.
a date. When it comes out of the mouth of Mr. Turkey, you know it means business. So he goes goes ahead of Top Rank. He goes ahead of Matchroom and says, June 1st, we're getting it. Finally, undisputed light heavyweight. We talked about this fight, you know, at length. We talked about it after Beterbiev's last win. Are you still leaning? Are you still feeling like it's Beterbiev's now? Because he had the most recent spectacular win compared to Bivol's UD that he had on the Day of Reckoning.
So I always leaned Bivol, and I have for years, and I think I've talked about that on our air on past shows. It's definitely closing. I'm not sure I'm picking Beterbiev. I'm actually not sure about picking either guy at this point. As we get closer to that fight,
we can
still
a lean though. We can lean.
Yeah, I would say I'm probably leaning towards Beterbiev now. I think that what he showed in that Callum Smith fight was very impressive, and he just seems like he's streaking. I had a lot of questions about his age and that jaw situation because he took so much time off. That was answered in the Callum Smith fight, so that makes me lean a little bit towards Beterbiev. But we're splitting hairs here. As we get closer to the fight, you know, it's June 1st. We have a couple months, and I really start to break down these guys in the ring. I'll have a better understanding of where I'm going. But yeah, man, it is switched the dial for me. I have gone full 100% Bivol to, hey man, I can see Beterbiev winning this fight.
Yeah, and not only that, like. Now we have a date, you know, June 1st. It came right from Saudi.
Biggest fight, I think, can happen in the sport, honestly.
Yes. I and not in terms of, like, marketability, because both these guys are just, like, neither of them speak really good English and all that. But I think in terms of skill, in terms of sheer skill, in terms of...
And danger.
Okay, yeah. In terms of skill, in terms of danger, in terms of all four belts being on the line, Beterbiev Bivol, I believe, is the best skill matchup you could make in the sport right now, hands down.
Yeah, and I think we've actually done this on past shows because we were like close to getting this like a year ago, and we were talking about how good this fight is and kind of how he was falling under the radar. I think finally now, though, people are really opening their eyes to this, that this is a magnificent matchup and literally one for the ages. And so I'm happy that it's kind of happening the way it's happening. And honestly, both guys, I didn't see a decrement in their abilities. Bivol, you know, he looked good against Arthur, but he had a guy who wasn't really engaging. And Bivol did what Bivol does. He's had a lot of fights like that. His timing looked good. His distance looked good. Everything he does well, he was able to use in that fight. And then Beterbiev, actually, I think he looked better than I've ever seen him. So I feel like we're getting these guys pretty close to their primes, even though they're older.
Yeah, despite them being in their 30s and Beterbiev pushing 40, Beterbiev is showing no signs of weakness. Bivol is Bivol.
Testosterone level of a 22-year-old.
Well, that's another thing that's going to come into light, too. What's the testing going to be like? You know, he's a guy that has pulled out of a lot of fights, and there's fans out there, not to be a conspiracy theorist here, there's fans out there that are always wondering why Beterbiev has all these fight postponements. But on top of that, you know, it's the traditional fighter, it's the traditional boxer versus puncher. They've been champions in their weight class since 2017.
Kind of boxer puncher fight, but because I don't know, man. Beterbiev can box his ass.
I know. I just did something that a lot of people are guilty of, and that's just thinking that he's just this brute with power, Beterbiev. But he's known as a punch. He's no. When you think of him, you think of brutal power. But he's obviously a great boxer. On top of it, it's just you got to form it. That's how boxing is. You got to find break it down to as simple terms as possible. The mover and boxer of Bivol versus the power of Beterbiev. June 1st. How about this for a month stretch, Chris? May 4th, we have Canelo versus TBD. May 6th, we have Inoue versus Neri in the Tokyo Dome. May 12th, over in Australia, we have Lomachenko versus Kambosos for the vacant IBF. May 18th, Fury versus Usyk. That is the new date for that. And then June 1st, Beterbiev versus Bivol, a 4 to 5 week span with huge fights, undisputed fights, big time implications. Yeah, we might not be getting these fights right now, boxing fans. I mean, we're going to have to wait a little bit, but that's going to be a one heck of a 4 or 5 month span.
Yeah, and we're going to have a lot to cover right here in Inside Boxing Live. I mean, we're going to be patiently waiting for that Canelo announcement. Hopefully it's not what we're hearing, but that's probably what it's going to be. But still, a lot of good things
Charlo
coming up
still
down the pipe.
Yeah, he's picking Charlo still for Canelo.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm hearing.
Canelo, yeah, that's what I'm hearing as well. But you know, Terrence Crawford was bored last night on Twitter, and he put out, Terrence Crawford versus Canelo Alvarez is the biggest fight in boxing right now. These are not an opinion. These are facts.
I can't really argue with him about that because the crossover appeal of that fight is going to be massive. Is it the best fight? No. Is it better than Beterbiev Bibble? Absolutely not. But the crossover appeal and the marketability and the commercial aspect of that matchup, because of who they are, is huge.
By far. I mean, this is guys that are top 4 or 5 in the pound for pound. You got the Mexican fan base. You got Crawford's fans. American side of things, the ticket sellers of Canelo and Crawford coming off of that huge win and everyone being interested to see how does he back up that Spence win. Are we looking at an all-time great? Then you throw in, like, you know, smaller opponent versus the bigger opponent in Canelo, and can a smaller guy beat a bigger guy and all that in there. But I am seeing and hearing kind of the same things that are being thrown out there, is that, like, Canelo might fight Charlo in May, and not Benavidez in September. It might be Crawford in September. Does Crawford take a fight in between? Does Crawford take a fight until September? At that point, he would have been out of the ring 15 months. I mean, this is a guy that's always out of the ring. So those are some of the big picture questions in boxing right now. I don't know if Crawford will take a fight in between then.
I don't think he will. I don't think he will. I think all the moving parts to make that happen are going to be really tough, and I don't think you want to risk any kind of situations like we're dealing with Fury and Usyk. He's going to have a very small window to get that fight. It's going to be September or bust. If that fight doesn't happen September, I don't see Crawford and Canelo ever fighting. So
right.
I think he's going to do everything he can to make sure he gets there.
I think a future episode we're going to do is the most obvious fights you can make at every weight class. We'll start at like 112 and we'll go up to heavyweight, because right now in boxing, last year, 2023, there was so many obvious fights that had to be made, right? It was like Spence Crawford, obvious fight that had to be made, and it was. Ryan Garcia versus Gervonta Davis, obvious fight that had to be made. Right now, there's just like a lot of uncertainty about, like, what's the fight that has to be made that isn't already scheduled? You know, Beterbiev and Bivol are fighting. Fury and Usyk are fighting. Like, Ryan Garcia has too many options. Devin Haney has too many options. Gervonta Davis has too many options. Terrence Crawford is going after Canelo. Charlo's out of the picture. Like, there isn't. It's like a little murky right now. There's not that obvious fight that's out there that's not already scheduled.
Yeah, we should definitely do that, and we should have your picks versus my picks. What are we thinking? Decide which ones we think and why? Because, like you said, because it is murky, there's room for discussion about which fight is the best one in the weight class. I like that idea.
We'll do it when there's not as much news, because we have a midweek episode coming out for Teofimo, because he's fighting Jermaine Ortiz Thursday night over on ESPN. This past weekend, let's get into this. Conor Benn goes the distance with Pistol Pete Dobson for Benn. It's his second straight decision. This is after a long line of knockout wins. Chris, we know your history with Conor Benn, and everyone's tweeting me, what does Chris think? And I'm reading tweets. Chris Algieri is such a classy guy. He can say so much more, and he's not saying anything right now. But I'll ask you now. This is our podcast. What did you make of our guy, Conor Benn, and his performance against Pete Dobson?
Listen, silence is golden. I don't think I have to say anything that's not obvious. So where'd the power go? I mean, now he's, but also he's fighting guys that are not undersized. He's not picking up 40 pounders, moving up to 147. He's fighting guys who are actually 47. But the issue here is, listen, he was off for a while. He came back. Didn't look particularly great when he fought, was that a Roscoe a couple months back? But again, last minute kind of fight. They just kind of snuck it under the radar because of all the allegations and everything's going on with the BBOC and UCAD. And then he gets this fight, and it looked like a handpicked guy. He's someone that, you know, that we know from New York. He's been out of the ring. You know, they're fighting at 151. And not only did he not hurt Pete, he wasn't able to put him down. He wasn't able to deter him from coming forward. But beyond that, I think he's regressing. He showed a lot of defensive issues. He was getting hit with right hands pretty much. But, I mean, Pistol Pete didn't throw many shots. But when he did, I mean, he had a pretty high accuracy. And he was landing some good, clean right hands. You know, Ben was backing out straight with his hand down, which is, a mistake that he didn't always do. And it seems like he's regressing in terms of his technique, regardless of, you know, what we're talking about in terms of all the allegations and whatnot. But, yeah, I mean, these last two fights, it's almost like he's just falling in love with his power. And he's like, every time I hit somebody, they're going to go to dust. And now when they don't, you're starting to see the lack in experience and the lack in the technical proficiency that, if you always just work on your power and then it doesn't age you, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I think the more you see of something and the more you see of a fighter, you start to see everything. You start to see their weaknesses more than their strengths. And for a while, we're only seeing his strengths. And obviously, the allegations are out there and it's not resolved yet and all that. We don't have to add too much to that because everyone has either made up their mind or we don't know the truth, or we're ever going to get the truth, or ever going to get a settlement on this. He's fighting in Las Vegas, in the afternoon. They're skirting around ways for that, and they're also trying to get into that UK market. And that's my question. And next is, like, is he still marketable? You got to believe he is, because Matchroom is still, you know, aligned with him, and Eddie Hearn is still willing to put his neck on the line, whatever you want to say about Eddie Hearn and boxing promoters. But you know, you're seeing a lot of people call him out. You're seeing Devin Haney, not exactly call him out, but mention him. You're seeing a lot of UK fighters mention him. Gervonta Davis, this is the latest. Gervonta Davis and Conor Benn going back and forth to the point where Davis is just firing off five or six tweets. He's showing us screenshots where Eddie Hearn is, you know, dropping into the DMs and saying, do you really want this fight? And Gervonta's saying, yeah, I do. So that's what I'm trying to figure out here. Does it still make sense for these contenders? Does it still make sense for these champions to get into the ring with Ben? Is he still that marketable overseas to make these big fights?
It seems to me that Eddie is trying to put a square peg through a round hole with Ben, and he's trying to recoup whatever he's built up into the guy's career going forward. So obviously, they've gone through they've been blowing through a ton of money to get this guy back out there, skirting a lot of the rules, stepping around things, hurting his image, which I think is what you were alluding to, and just the handling of a lot of the things how he's handled a lot of these things has really turned people off. I don't know how popular he is in the UK compared to here, but I mean, if you read comments, there's not a lot of positivity coming back on these comments. And, on the back end of a performance like he did on Saturday night against Pistol Pete, who was an unheralded guy from New York, calling out those names doesn't really make sense. It looks like you're trying to cash out.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense from a competitive standpoint.
No, but like those guys will take those fights because it's a sterling record of a guy that doesn't look that dangerous anymore. So right. You can, you know, that's why when Davis is or Tank is go out there and goes, yeah, I'll fight him. He obviously saw something. He goes, oh yeah, I'm going to beat that guy. You know, I don't need this fight. This isn't a fight I need, but yeah, I could beat that guy and it'd be a good name on my record.
There's a lot of people that would like to tune in to watch him get pasted. That's just like something that goes well beyond just Conor Benn. That's just like a formula that Mayweather used for years. And
there's but that's that part of popularity there as well. That's important so love or hate you tuning in.
Right. I don't see him like getting to that championship level. Like, I don't see him getting better in there. Like, I obviously see him regressing, like you just talked about. But, you know, he's getting the attention of some of these names. Like, will he fight Gervonta Davis? Probably not. I mean, Conor Benn rehydrated to 170 pounds fight night. I mean, we're talking about Gervonta Davis, who has fought at 140 once, who put a rehydration clause on Ryan Garcia. Like, yeah, this is all fun and games now on Twitter in February to watch this all play out. But, you know, Ben, I they might be desperate enough, Team Ben, they might be desperate enough to accept a hydration clause and go, you know, make obviously Gervonta the A side and take all of his demands to step into the ring. Because I feel like right now, even Eddie said it, is that, you know, everyone's calling us out right now because they see like a big money fight and an opponent that's there for the taking. So they might be willing to play ball, might be willing to put it on PBC and all that. So if you're interested in that, he's not going anywhere. The Conor Benn saga rolls on, but I would agree with you. I was not that impressed with him inside the ring.
Yeah, no, like I said, the defense, not setting things up, just loading up on power shots, especially early on. And then the gas tank, you know, he didn't, he The Orozco fight was actually impressive because he came on late and was like really, really pushing. This fight wasn't that, wasn't like that. He was getting hit with shots. It seemed like he got stung a few times from Dobson. So yeah, I have to agree that on the back end of that performance, it's really difficult to start throwing out names like Terrence Crawford and Devin Haney and Davis.
The other fight this weekend, light heavyweight domestic dust up, as they like to say over there.
Good fight.
Bawazzi like versus Dan Izzy is a good fight. Bawazzi drops him twice. Wins a decision in a nice, competitive, fun fight at 175. You know, Bawazzi, you know, he's hot and cold. I think he's a contender. I think he's a damn good fighter at 175. There's some names for him. He can fight maybe better BFB ball winner, and he can fight Anthony Yard. He wants to stay on domestic ground and kind of wait out better BFB ball. But I really liked what I saw out of Bawazzi.
Yeah, I did too. I've been a fan of him for a little bit. He was a guest commentator with me back in San Antonio when Bam Rodriguez fought Quadras, and I got to talk to him a little bit off air and on air. And you know, we were talking about the business side and where he sees himself, and I was very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's got the amateur background. He's got the physicality. He's a good athlete, but he also, it seemed to me from what my conversation with him, he had the mindset too. And I just wrote an article that highlighted this fight, the Bawazzi Aziz fight, because I was very.
You wrote an article.
Yeah, I write articles for Pro Box TV.
Well, look at you, bro. I know you're a professor. I know you grade papers. I know you write them too.
Yeah, it's called Chris Algieri School of Thought.
So love that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. So I was talking about the light heavyweight division, obviously because it better be Evan Bivol. And then I highlighted this fight because I think there's a lot of implications for the winner here. I was leaning towards Bawazzi and he impressed because Aziz is a tough guy, man. He's a dangerous guy. Throws a lot of punches. He's got long arms. He's got good power. But I in the article I said it, like, he's got an it factor too. He finds shots and he's a dangerous guy. Sometimes you can't see some of the shots that he lands. But Bawazzi was just too sharp, too clean, too strong. Took the punches too well. I mean, showed a great chin. So yeah, good fight. And I think he's one of those guys. He's going to be next in line for these big fights. If you told me that he was fighting Bivol, I would be like, I mean, obviously after Better BF or either one of them, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, line him up. That's a great fight.
Yeah, he's already talking about I'll fight Anthony Yard, and you know, he makes a lot of money there, and that's a banger. And you know, just don't wait and see what happens with Better BF and Bivol. Like, go out and keep your momentum going. And I would love Yard versus Bawazzi, but that was a nice fight over in the UK. Ben Whitaker, I know you want to touch on Ben Whitaker. He's doing something that a lot of fighters I feel like need to do. He needs to do something where people get to talk about you. You know, he's showboating in there. He's a former Olympian. I just saw the video. I didn't see his fight, but I just saw the highlight reel. I was like, oh my God, that's like Bugs Bunny stuff. Like, he was like throwing back behind the back punches. You know, this is a guy that won a silver medal. Like, maybe you see this in like the YouTuber stuff, but you know what? He's getting people to talk about him. Obviously, he has skills. Do you have an issue with the showboating? What do you think of Ben Whitaker?
Well, first of all, he's fantastic, and the things that he's able to do in the ring are really something else. I mean, the guy got on SportsCenter. Like, people, you know, he's obviously getting news. It's working.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, but you know, or at least it's on their Instagram page, I think.
Okay, yeah, that matters.
But yeah, no, it matters. And you know, the issue, and I think I've read some comments, mostly from fighters, people who are in the sport. You know, it's like, do you have to showboat so hard? You know, you're fighting guys that are literally lined up to get knocked out.
Yeah, his opponent was 10-14.
Yeah, he had 13 losses. You know, so at that stage, it's different. If you're Terrence Crawford and you are dogging Spence while you're beating him up and knocking him out,
talking to Jermell Charlo in the crowd, you're making your plans for later.
That's A1 trash talk and showboating, and nobody's gonna knock that. But when you got a guy who's 10-14 who maybe took the fight on short notice, who's, you know, fighting for a paycheck, and you're sitting there dogging him out that way, and from when I was watching the fight, even in the corner, his coaches were like, "Hey, end it this round." Okay. Like, it seemed like they were even like, "Dude, stop playing with your food and end it this round. Let's not get hit with something stupid. Let's not get cut." And he went out there and he knocked him out that round. It was very, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, listen, bro, this is Bob. I've been saying this for years. You got to figure out a way to cut through the noise. Yeah, don't do it all the time. I mean, you know, one time, like you said, don't be disrespectful.
You don't want to be that guy.
Yes, don't be that guy. You're right. But if you can find a way onto Instagram, you know, ESPN or SportsCenter or just Twitter. And now Ben Whitaker, I saw his name all over the timeline yesterday. I mean, it helps. He obviously has got the skills and they will progress him. One last story, end on a high note. I was in Orlando this weekend calling fights for Most Valuable Prospects. Jake Paul's promotion. It's not YouTuber fights. These are legitimate prospects coming up the ranks. H2L Silv. Ashton Silv was the main event. He picked up a nice win over Esteban Falcao. But in the co-main event, Chris, there's this guy, Julian Quiet Storm Smith. And he's called the Quiet Storm because he's deaf. He is legally deaf. He had hearing until about age five. He got meningitis as a kid, lost his hearing. And he's from Chicago, had a nice amateur career, but nothing crazy. Won a few Golden Gloves here and there and kind of like taught himself how to box, you know, linked up with a few PAL coaches, this, that, and the other. Turns pro and has some success. He fought on one of our cards. He got a win. He went viral because his sign language guy was telling him the decision in the ring. I took the video and it went viral. Awesome. Yeah, it was great. And he was ecstatic and he got invited to fights with Jake Paul and all that. And he's now become a leader of the deaf community and disability community too. So he loses a tough fight in our last event and we bring him back and we put him in there. MVP puts him in there against a guy named Orestes Velasquez, who is trained by Ishmael Salas, who has 300 plus Cuban amateur fights, is ranked ninth by the WBA, 8-0 with 7 knockouts. I personally thought that heading into this fight, Julian Smith was going to get probably stopped. I was like, all right, this is a
bridge. He was a big underdog, right?
Huge underdog, bro. Like, yeah. Velasquez was a minus 2,500 favorite. Like, we're not going to, we might not see a bigger upset this year in terms of odds.
Wow.
So the fight starts and Quiet Storm told us in the fighter meeting, I said, dude, how are you going to go after this guy? He's a power puncher. Are you going to fight fire with fire? And Smith goes, I'm going to fight fire with lava. He does it in sign language to me. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's going to take it to the power puncher. I guess that's what you got to do against power punchers. So I'm like, all right, let's see if he's actually going to do this. First round, drops him. Julian Smith drops Velasquez, and we're sitting ringside, me, Nonito Donaire, and Wade Plum, and we're like, oh my God, is a flash knockdown, and is it a real knockdown? No, he was like legit hurt. Second round staggers him with some right hands. The guy could not get out of the way of a right hand. Middle rounds get a little hairy because Velasquez started holding. He started to take away that right hand. Some veteran tactics started landing some punches of his own. I'm like, all right, they're probably going to give this guy a decision. It's an 8-round fight. He's the A side, Velasquez. But then Smith, there was like an accidental headbutt, and Velasquez is dazed, and Smith pounces, stops him in the ninth. Guy quits on his stool. His mom comes into the ring. She's crying. You know, they're lifting him up on his shoulders. He's crying. I look over at Nonito. I'm crying. He's like, we have tears in our eyes because it's like a real-life Rocky story. And I really wanted to highlight that. Julian Quiet Storm Smith, there's a lot of bad stories in boxing, a lot of negative stuff. This was like one of the cooler things that I got to see. And I was like, damn, I got to call that fight. And it had crazy moments. There were 10-7 rounds, 10-8 rounds. There was headbutts. There was holding. It was a wild one. But shout out to Julian Quiet Storm Smith. You're my hero.
Man, I love it. And I was just looking. I got to watch that fight. I got to go back and watch it. I didn't get a chance to. But
it's awesome.
Yeah. His opponent, man, I've seen him. Orestes Velasquez is a badass, dude. He's a 30-year-old Cuban. He's a puncher. He beat Mohamed Sumaro, who we've had on our air on ProBox TV. He's a very tough guy. He beat Marcelino Nicolas Lopez. Who's
dude, he
very,
beat
very
Salgado, and who was a world champion in his second or third fight. I know Salgado was probably past it at that point, but still.
But still, there's so much belief in this guy. Man, that's super impressive. Not only did... was he a big underdog, but he actually beat like a really good guy. And,
awesome. And he's got, you know, so many things were stacked against him. Like obviously the, not just like being deaf, but like he didn't have good training coming up. He's just like a Chicago, you know, PAL amateur with Golden Gloves. Like the cards were stacked against him.
He's 7-2 fighting a guy who's 8-0. Like,
yeah,
he's got seven KOs.
Everything was stacked against this guy, you know, out of the ring. Now, even inside the ring, you know, Orestes Velasquez is trained by Ishmael Salas, who's like one of the best trainers. Yep. It just was awesome. It was awesome to see an upset. It was awesome to see that. So shout out Quiet Storm. You're the man. And
also, that's one of the best nicknames around because obviously that's such a good nickname.
The Quiet Storm. Like he came in like the Undertaker too. A lot of questions because people are like, how does he hear the bell? Like he can hear vibrations and stuff. The referee has to like really be on top of things because sometimes Julian, he won't hear the vibrations. He won't hear the bell, and he'll continue to fight after the bell is rung and the opponents don't understand. But now that this is the third time he's fought on MVP, so they kind of understand.
Bring him back.
Oh, he's definitely – he's got the whatever, the WBA regional belt. He had it at the after party. He was just a humble dude. Like, he was FaceTiming everyone. Like, it was pretty freaking cool to see up close.
Great story. Great story.
We end there. We end with a nice positive note. What's our line? Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you got some tips on us because we're heading to Vegas.
It's tax season, and at LifeLock, we know you're tired of numbers. But here's a big one you need to hear. Billions. That's the amount of money and refunds the IRS has flagged for possible identity fraud. Now here's another big number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it guaranteed. One last big number. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for the threats you can't control. Terms apply.